Before you listen to today's broadcast, can I ask you to do three things? First, pray with me that God would use this show to touch many lives in a lasting way. Second, if you're blessed by the broadcast, share it with others. Tell others about the Line of Fire. And third, would you pray about standing with us in support with a one-time gift or as a monthly torchbearer to help us spread the fire? If you'd like to stand with us, go to askdrbrown.org. Click on support. Be blessed.
Did you hear about the computer virus, the worm that virtually crippled the computers used in the nuclear facilities in Iran? There's a message for each of us, and I'm going to tell you about it today on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the Line of Fire.
Yes, it's true. I'm going to talk to you today about the computer worm that basically disabled much of the computing work for the nuclear program, nuclear facilities in Iran. We're going to talk about that with a spiritual application, and I'm going to give you a spiritual application about the WikiLeaks, the leak of massive amount of confidential documents. I'm going to give you some spiritual application on that. But before I do that, if you've got high blood pressure, just relax, because we're going to get your blood boiling about something else in a moment. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us on this special day. No, it's not special because it's the day before I leave for India. It's a special day because it is my wife Nancy's birthday, and I thank God for her. We met in 1974. She was 19 years old. I was 19 years old. Can you believe that? We've been together ever since, married in 76. She's the greatest gift God's given me outside of my salvation. So if you're listening, happy birthday, hon. I'm trusting we'll have a wonderful family birthday night and that God's blessing will be special on you this coming year. All right, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Or our Facebook page, very important to get there today because we've got some links for you in terms of some action you can take. You'll find out why in a moment. Ask Dr. Brown, ask D.R. Brown on Facebook. Okay, this is a blood boiler. And it should be. There is such massive popularity with Apple these days, with Mac. They've made a massive resurgence in recent years with the phenomenal success of the iPod and the iPhone and various Mac computers. My wife, Nancy, has been an avid Mac user for years. Got a lot of folks at our fire offices to switch from PC to Mac, not me yet, and based on these events today, not anytime soon. But anyway, the iPad, the presence of Apple is just massive in our society and culture, and they do a lot of things well with technology and take good care of customers, etc. And they also do some bad things, like donating $100,000 to support opposition to Prop 8, the pro-family, pro-marriage ballot a couple years. Well, it's just back in 2008. Okay, but that's not what I want to talk to you about. Manhattan Declaration sent out this note today. The Manhattan Declaration app was accepted by Apple and rated as a 4+, meaning it contained no objectionable material. Yet Apple pulled the app from iTunes shortly after a small but very vocal protest by those who favor gay marriage and abortion. Now, for those who are not familiar with Manhattan Declaration, this is a statement and an organization. Various Christians from a wide range of denominational backgrounds coming together and standing for defense of the sanctity of life, traditional marriage, and religious liberty. It issues a clarion call to Christians to adhere firmly to their convictions in these three areas. So sanctity of life, the right of every child to survive in the womb without being killed by its parents, traditional marriage, that marriage is God intended as the union of a man and woman, not just any two people, and religious liberties, that we should not have our liberties restricted, our freedoms of religion, because of gay activism or whatever else. And the Manhattan Declaration is very clear. You don't bash others. You state your differences respectfully, etc. Well, a protest. Some people were upset with the fact that the Manhattan Declaration had a presence on iTunes. So statements that are coming out, articles, materials, calls to action, that kind of thing. They were upset about it. Those that support same-sex marriage, those that support abortion. You say, well, I guess, you know, Apple just has to be careful to avoid political kinds of things. And Oh, yeah? How about Planned Parenthood apps? How about Planned Parenthood of Southern New England, PPSNE cost calculator? This is an iPhone app, so you can find out where what insurance covers. And Planned Parenthood's not doing heart transplants, okay? Planned Parenthood is not doing emergency surgery for dying poor people, you know, where you need a liver transplant. We're talking about abortions and things like that. There's a Planned Parenthood cost calculator app that you can get on your iPhone. That's okay. Or how about this? Gayapps.com. There's so many apps that they rate, you know, top apps. Apple gay apps, you know, gaydar apps where you can click to see if somebody else that's gay has an iPhone near you and you could find each other for some anonymous encounter or whatever else you want to do. How about this? I'm looking at the gay apps site that someone sent me. Purple, gay dating app for same-sex flirting. Gay Scout by Dameron, gay men's social network, gay speed date, boy ahoy, gay chat. Just judging by the outward pictures here, you don't want to click to see what's on the inside. Grindr, gay, bi, and curious guy finder of the same sex. Gay dancer, and on, and all these gay apps. There's a Planned Parenthood app where it tells you who to vote for. One after another, I've just been sent several lists of these. This is insanity. This is absolute insanity. Apple has the right to do it, but if you're an iPhone user, iTunes user, Apple user, make your voice heard. I'm sorry. What am I thinking? Of course, it's far more important to enjoy technology you're comfortable with than to take a moral stand. Sorry, what was I thinking? Yikes! And how insensitive of me to intrude in people's lives and encourage them to stand for righteousness and to be salt and light and to be a moral conscience in society and to say, you know, Apple's free to do what it wants to do as a company, but if it's going to discriminate against solid Christians holding to biblical views in a gracious attitude and promote all types of gay dating sex apps and Planned Parenthood cost calculators for abortions and so on, I think I'll switch to some other technology. Now, look, the truth be known, whether you use Microsoft, whether you use Apple, all these companies score 100%. The major software companies and so on and the biggest computer vendors, the majority of them score 100% on the Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index. The Corporate Equality Index is where they rate companies based on their compliance with certain gay activist goals, which can even include having special, quote, transitioning guidelines for workers. What's transitioning? Oh, sex change surgery. So you have special policies in place for name change and bathroom accommodations and so on and so forth. Well, yeah, both Microsoft and Apple and other companies score 100% on the Corporate Equality Index, but doing something like this is going even further. So I would like to hear from some of you today that can tell me about the Montgomery boycott, the Montgomery bus boycott, Montgomery, Alabama, the bus boycott led by Dr. Martin Luther King and other civil rights leaders some decades ago that was a key part of the national movement against segregation and for civil rights. Can any of you tell me about the history of that? Any of you have any personal recollections from family members? Or you can just tell me how it happened in Rosa Parks incident. I just want to hear a little bit from some of you. And the reason being that this was not a one-day event. This was a sacrificial event. I wonder if any of you can enlighten our listeners on the history or what actually happened, how long it lasted, some of the things that tied in with the Montgomery bus boycott, which helped break the back of segregation in the South and bring the injustice to the attention of the nation. Why am I bringing it up? Because people stood by their convictions. I'm not equating, please understand me, I am not equating in terms of weight, in terms of suffering, I am not equating Apple acting prejudicially, at least for the moment, against the Manhattan Declaration and many conservative Christians like you and me, and in favor of gay sex dating sites, whatever the thing is, and Planned Parenthood, the hardship cannot be compared. Okay, we're not talking about segregation and the hardship that African Americans went through. But the principle I want to draw is this, that when someone's personhood was violated, when there was the constant degrading of the humanity of a class of citizens here in America, they got to the breaking point and they took action, and the action was sacrificial. But that sacrificial action brought about change. Are we willing to take any action? Small? Minor? Tiny? Can you even call it a sacrifice? Switching from Apple to Android, maybe, or just writing a letter? Are we willing to do anything just to stand for righteousness? I say it's time we make our voice heard. How about complaining about some of the gay sex dating sites that are on Apple iTunes apps? That they pulled porn stuff when it was protested. How about this? So go to Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook, and there's a link with the Manhattan Declaration telling you exactly what you can do. Let's do something now. How about it? Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I get into the computer virus that crippled the Iranian nuclear developments and give you some reflections on WikiLeaks and secret documents being made known, I just want to take a couple more minutes on this Apple double standard issue. And again, if you can tell me something about the Montgomery bus boycott, I've studied it, I know some about it, but would love to hear some of you that have some background on this, studied it, know about it. Give me a call at 866-34-TRUTH. The Rosa Parks incident, what it sparked, the sacrifice that was necessary, how long the bus boycott lasted. It's important for folks to hear that afresh today, because major changes don't just happen because someone sits back in a easy chair and thinks about it. 866-34-TRUTH. Or if you'd like to get involved directly contacting Apple, go to AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire, and there's a link to Manhattan Declaration telling you what you can do. I just want to read a note from the Manhattan Declaration. They say this. We emphasize with great sincerity that disagreement is not gay bashing. Anyone who takes the time to read the Manhattan Declaration can see that the language used to defend traditional marriage, the sanctity of human life, and religious liberty is civil, non-inflammatory, and respectful. The Manhattan Declaration clearly calls its signers to reject, quote, disdainful condemnation of those who disagree, and declares that all people are worthy of respect because all are loved by God. And yet, some folks who support same-sex, quote, marriage, obviously not marriage if it's same-sex, but same-sex, quote, marriage, and also support abortion. They vocally protested this somewhere around Thanksgiving time. The Manhattan Declaration app gets removed from iTunes. I want you to consider the double standard here. I want you to think about not just that they pull this, okay, but these are some of the apps that are run on iTunes that Apple has not pulled, all right? And perhaps they really like them being there. This is the tagline for Grindr. This is a major gay app, popular gay app. Whether he's Mr. Right or Mr. Tonight, your man is hanging out on Grindr, a killer location-based social networking tool for the iPhone or iPod Touch. How about this one? Oh, a gay spot. This is an app. This is an app that you can get on your iPhone. A gay spot. Although you'll need to look elsewhere for reviews or public cruising locations. Sorry, George Michael. If it's a gay adult business you're seeking, check within for nearly 1,000 bathhouses, sex clubs, adult video stores, and bars with back rooms across the U.S. and Canada, all with mappable addresses, hours, and contact info. And then I mentioned Planned Parenthood voting guides and so on and so forth. And it is mind-boggling that they can have this double standard, that people can protest and say, this app, the Manhattan Declaration, says that marriage is between a man and woman, and therefore they oppose same-sex marriage, and they say that you shouldn't kill babies in the womb, therefore they oppose abortion. That should be pulled. That should be pulled? And yet sites advertising gay bathhouses and calculators to find out what an abortion is going to cost you with Planned Parenthood, those are okay? If that's not a double standard, I've never heard of one in my life. Let's wake up to reality, friends. You say, yeah, but what good does it do if we do something? First, it stirs your own conscience. It causes you to think about morality. It causes you to think about what comes first. It causes you to ask the question, would I be willing to forego my favorite technology? That's a big question for me because I'm a technology guy. I've been a gadget guy for years and years. My first personal computer I bought in 1985 before some of you were breathing. Yeah, they had them back then. Didn't get much, $3,000. You didn't get much at all. Probably get more in your wristwatch now in technology. But I'm into technology. What kind of sacrifice will we be willing to make if we have to stand for what's right? And it's just another way of rebuking injustice and rebuking hypocrisy and calling people to account. All right, let me go to the phones. Carolina in Fayetteville, thank you for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I am finishing my master's in social work, and I studied a little bit about the Montgomery movement.
Uh-huh.
The basic knowledge that I have about it is that for communities to generate changes, they need to get organized. They need to act in a way that they're going to oppose the system that is driving them.
Mm. So it was an organized thing. It was an actual stance that people said, okay, we can't just do this random individually. Do you know how long it lasted?
I want to think that it was about 8 months that they decided not to use the buses. So actually the people that was owning the business, they were losing money because nobody was using the buses. They were just walking or riding their bikes or carpool riding, but they didn't buy into the role of not being able to see other African-American people using the service as they truly deserved.
Yeah, and so everyone understands this. The bus companies were owned by whites. The great majority of the riders were blacks. So
exactly.
you're saying it may have even gone on close to a year, the total length. I don't have the exact number in my head, but it's close to a year in my thinking. But bottom line is, it was hard for these people because they didn't necessarily have other means of transportation, and yet they took a stand.
Right. They organized among themselves to try to find out their needs to be met within their own community. And they made a stand regardless that they needed to make some sacrifices.
Yeah, and the other important point you're making, and I really appreciate the background you're bringing to this, is that within the community they had to think through the implications and then work for one another, but they made a joint sacrifice together. And what was the result of this? What was the outcome?
Well, actually, there was like a final, I am not an expert, as I said, but I know that it was a final incident that generated a groundbreaking movement that was when Rosa Parks, she chose not to sit in the side of the bus that was only restricted to people of color. And then this got started, the same kind of manifestations,
yep,
not only in the Deep South, but also here in Greensboro and some other towns with a big population of African-American residents.
Got it. Hey, Carolina, thank you so much for calling in and for the background and for the practical lessons. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Friends, the Rosa Parks incident was the trigger. Here was a woman who had thought to herself, you know, if I'm asked to move, get up and surrender my seat to a white man, I'm not going to do it. She just thought about that. And then coming home, Christmas time, tired, working hard. When she was asked to surrender her seat, she refused. She was arrested. Can you imagine? Hey, that's in the lifetimes of many of you that were listening. Someone took a stand. It sparked a movement, and people made sacrifices for a cause. Again, I'm not equating the Apple situation with the civil rights movement. I'm simply saying there are lessons that we can learn today from the civil rights movement. Back with the computer worm. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown celebrating Nancy's birthday today. And she has a little poll on her Facebook page asking where we are going for dinner. It was her request where we're going with some of our family for dinner tonight. No one's gotten it right yet. And maybe I'll tell you after the fact. Tomorrow I leave for India. You don't want to miss tomorrow's broadcast. We're going to talk about the Southern Poverty Law Center's ridiculous stance on so-called hate and anti-gay groups. That's tomorrow's broadcast. Next day, I'm telling you some stories from India. Some of the things I've experienced firsthand, lived through in India, some remarkable stories. What I realized during the show is, boy, I can only tell a few out of many, as this is trip number 17. And then, God willing, Friday and Monday, we're going to do our best to come your way live from India. So don't miss any of these upcoming shows. All right. I promised that I would talk to you about the computer worm that almost took out the nuclear computing abilities of Iran. And I want to read some of the story to you. The lengthiest one I saw was from Ed Barnes on Fox News. There may be more full stories, but just fascinating. I want to talk to you about this, and I want to make spiritual application. And then a little later in the show, I'm going to talk to you about the leaks of all these confidential documents and spiritual application from that. All right? Mystery surrounds cyber missile that crippled Iran's nuclear weapons ambitions. In the 20th century, this would have been a job for James Bond. The mission: infiltrate the highly advanced, securely guarded enemy headquarters where scientists in the clutches of an evil master are secretly building a weapon that can destroy the world, then render that weapon harmless and escape undetected. But in the 21st century, Bond doesn't get the call. Instead, the job is handled by a suave and very sophisticated secret computer worm, a jumble of code called Stuxnet, which in the last year has not only crippled Iran's nuclear program, but has caused a major rethinking of computer security around the globe. The construction of the worm was so advanced, it was, quote, like the arrival of an F-35 into a World War I battlefield, says Ralph Langner, the computer expert who was the first to sound the alarm about Stuxnet. Others have called it the first weaponized computer virus. So, of course, there have been all these concerns. Iran developing nuclear capability from documents recently released. Saudi Arabia is upset. You know, they want us to go after Iran because they're concerned. These are all Muslims, but they're Sunnis versus Shiites. So there's great division in the Islamic world. And there's great concern among some of the other Islamic regimes, Saudi Arabia and others, that Iran is going to hurt them, not just Israel. And then, of course, Israel. Is Israel going to try to take out the nuclear reactors as they took out the Iraqi ones a couple decades back? All this speculation, discussion, and in the meantime, there's a worm, a computer worm. Well, how can you get this thing in there? How can it happen? Simply put, the article continues, Stuxnet is an incredibly advanced, undetectable computer worm that took years to construct and was designed to jump from computer to computer until it found a specific protected control system that it aimed to destroy Iran's nuclear enrichment program. The target was seemingly impenetrable. For security reasons, it lay several stories underground and was not connected to the World Wide Web. So how do you get to it? That meant Stuxnet had to act as sort of a computer cruise missile. As it made its passage through a set of unconnected computers, it had to grow and adapt to security measures and other changes until it reached one that could bring it into the nuclear facility. When it ultimately found its target, it would have to secretly manipulate it until it was so compromised it ceased normal functions. And finally, after the job was done, the worm would have to destroy itself without leaving a trace. That's what we're learning happened in Iran's nuclear facility. So how? Let me just read a little bit. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating. At Natanz, that's the which houses the centrifuge arrays used for processing uranium into nuclear fuel. At Natanz, for almost 17 months, Stuxnet, the worm, quietly worked its way into the system and targeted a specific component. The frequency converters made by the German equipment manufacturer Siemens that regulated the speed of the spinning centrifuges used to create nuclear fuel. So it goes on with what it actually did. It would slow down and mess the thing up without stopping it entirely. So something's wrong, you don't know why. It's slowly destroying things, both hardware and software, but you don't know what's actually happening. Here's how it worked, according to experts who have examined the worm. The nuclear facility in Iran runs an air gap security system, meaning it has no connections to the web, making it secure from outside penetration. Stuxnet was designed and sent into the area around Iran's Natanz nuclear power plant, just how may never be known, to infect a number of computers on the assumption that someone working in the plant would take work home on a flash drive, acquire the worm, and then bring it back to the plant. How ingenious. Once the worm was inside the plant, the next step was to get the computer system there to trust it and allow it into the system. This was accomplished because the worm contained a digital certificate stolen from J. Micron, a large company in an industrial park in Taiwan, etc. Once allowed entry, the worm contained 4 zero-day elements in its first target, the Windows 7 operating system that controlled the overall operation of the plant. Zero-day elements are rare and extremely valuable vulnerabilities in a computer system that can be exploited only once. Two of the vulnerabilities were known, but the other two had never been discovered. Experts say that no hacker would waste 0 days in that manner. And it goes on. It's just, it's mind-boggling. Estimates are that this went on for more than a year, leaving the Iranian program in chaos. And as it did, the worm grew and adapted throughout the system. As new worms entered the system, they would meet and adapt and become increasingly sophisticated. People are saying that of course, immediately people think, hey, Israel was behind this, and hey, more power to them if they were. Yes, that's what I said, especially when it's not killing people in the process or blowing buildings up with people inside. It's a worm attacking computers that are ultimately involved with what could lead to nuclear warfare. But others say there's no way that any one nation could have done it, that you'd need a collaboration of technology and technicians from Israel and the United States and other countries. I mean, that's how massive this process was. Okay, so what's my spiritual application here? Here's what I've been thinking about. Are you ready? And it's not a stretch. You think of a day where wars are fought just with guns and knives and then with bombs and torpedoes and more sophisticated technology like that, laser technology, blowing up buildings that are targeted, so on. Okay, I understand that wars will continue to be fought like that. But here, there's an even more sophisticated war, and it's unseen. Oh, it's unseen to the natural eye, but if you know what you're looking for, you can see it. And in a sense, it's more deadly than the other stuff in terms of its overall effect. What about the spiritual world? What about spiritual warfare? What about the fact that there's another realm that we can't see with the natural eye, but with the spiritual eye, that is even more real than this natural world, because this natural world is ultimately going to deteriorate and have to be renewed. The natural world, what we can see, was created by the spiritual world, what we can't see. And the battle that we do there in the spiritual world is far more effective than all of the stuff we do in the natural. It was S.D. Gordon who said, prayer is striking the winning blow. Service is gathering up the results. Let's learn from a computer worm that you can't see with the natural eye, but behind the scenes does destruction to bad things, in short. And let's put on our spiritual armor, and let's engage in spiritual warfare, and let's take hold of the promises of God, and let's come against the works of darkness, and let's war in the spirit, and it will have a profound effect in the natural. We come back, some spiritual reflections on the WikiLeaks document fiasco. Thank you for joining us today on the Line of Fire, Michael Brown. I consider it a privilege to be in your living rooms, coming through your computers, in your cars as you're driving, wherever you're listening to this. Maybe you're jogging and listening to a podcast. If you are, then say something to Apple, will you please? If you missed the early part of the show, we talked about the horrific, shocking double standard where after protest from folks that were upset with the Manhattan Declaration, standing for marriage, therefore against same-sex marriage, and standing for the sanctity of life, therefore against abortion. These groups protested that iTunes should remove this app. It shouldn't be an iPhone app, the Manhattan Declaration app. It got removed, whereas, in a, what can you call it but shocking double standard, Apple has Planned Parenthood, you know, abortion price calculators, or what insurance will cover, an app for your iPhone, or all types of gay dating websites quite explicit about sexual activity and so on. Those are welcome, but if you stand for life and family, it's not welcome. Go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the line of fire. Come on, just do this. There's a link that tells you what you can do in a civil spirit just to voice your disapproval. All right, I want to talk about another moral lesson, spiritual lesson we can learn, the release of the Wiki, the WikiLeaks documents. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me that so many confidential documents have been hacked. And it's shocking to me that the fellow involved is not guilty of espionage or something like that. I don't know international law well enough to know what's going on, but it's shocking that it's just, it can happen, okay? That being said, it causes me to reflect that ultimately there are no secrets. Ultimately, there are always other ears listening and other eyes watching. And Jesus said that which is told in secret will one day be shouted from the rooftops. It reminds me of some of the situations where people had a live mic and they didn't realize this during a commercial break, and they're talking to each other on a TV show with a live mic and it gets picked up and recorded. Or somebody on a plane making some remark to somebody else and someone behind them captures the whole thing on video on their phone. I want to say plainly that we should always live as if we're living in the light. Yeah, you close the bathroom door and you do certain things in your private life that are private, but I'm talking about your words. I'm talking about your ethical, moral conduct. You always live as if you're living in the light. Oh, we've all sinned, we've all fallen short, and we've pleaded with God for mercy, and we've received his mercy and grace and cleansing with the blood of Jesus. There's not a human being alive who's lived many years that doesn't have something embarrassing, something that's happened, something they said, something they did that they wish they hadn't, and that they'd be mortified if the whole world knew about it. I can't imagine anyone living much of their life without that happening. Thank God for the blood of Jesus. Thank God for his mercy. He's not out to expose us. He's not out to hurt us. He's out to bless us. That being said, we will reap what we sow. That being said, there are things that are hidden in secret that will one day come to light, in particular, if we don't repent. It's better to get right with God now than to have things exposed on that day or even in this world. Nancy and I were talking about this last night, and you know, we were reflecting on the fact, not that we're so perfectly holy, but hopefully there's some strong ethics and foundations in our lives that we live out in a way that's pleasing before the Lord, and that we live as in such a way that we're worthy of the calling, which we're exhorted to do throughout the New Testament, throughout the Word, to walk worthy of the calling. But when we're talking privately about someone, some minister, some TV preacher or something like that, that we don't know personally, or maybe some friend that we feel is doing the wrong thing, or some person that we may have feel wronged us or something, our private conversation is such. I mean, with the rarest of exception, in which case one or the other, we catch ourselves and get this right. Our private conversation is such that it would not be embarrassing. In other words, that we don't think it's right to slander in private either. We don't think it's right to malign in private either. Years ago, I went through a difficult situation, and one major Christian group was involved with it. And I'd be talking to Nancy. We'd be alone in our bedroom, and I'd be talking to her, and I'd say, you know, I really have a problem with the way this organization has handled things, but thank God for the good they do. And I remember she said, hey, it's just the two of us here. In other words, she understands my heart. I don't need to add that clarifying remark, but it was important that even in my private conversations with my wife or in my own journal, if I take issue with someone, I do so in a way that is respectful. If I was just praying for someone that I think is doing a lot of damage in the name of Jesus, and I was praying for this man, I said, God, to the extent he's doing your will, strengthen him and bless him. And where he's not doing your will, bring him to repentance and help him do the right thing. And I pray the same for myself. Let our conduct be such that if it got revealed to the outside world, rather than people reviling us, they would respect us. Back with more. Thank you for joining us today on The Line of Fire. We've covered three major things on the broadcast. Number one, Apple's glaring double standard and hypocrisy removing a pro-family app from their iPhone apps, iTunes apps, while carrying all types of gay dating web apps and Planned Parenthood apps, etc. So we're encouraging everyone to go to AskDrBrown.org, click on The Line of Fire, and there's a link. Can I just ask you to do this? Won't cost you a dime. Won't put a dime in my pocket, but it'll just be a stand for righteousness and calling Apple to step higher. Go there, click on the link, and just write the letter, do what you're asked to do, and you'll be blessed in doing it, all right? And then we talked about the computer virus, the amazing worm. Again, if Israel's behind you, United States, whoever's behind it, it's an amazing work of technology to help cripple Iran's nuclear facilities. If these were being used for humanitarian purposes, for the good of the country, to help the poor, that's one thing. When their ultimate goal, as far as we know, is nuclear armament, that's a bad thing. And the lesson from that is sometimes the greatest damage can be done, hidden things, unseen things, just because I could be sitting here at my computer and there's a worm. I don't even know it. I can't see it. It's unseen, but it's real. It can be seen by other eyes. The same with the spiritual realm. And then the leak of documents with WikiLeaks, just another reminder, as outrageous as this whole thing is, another reminder to us to understand there are no secrets, to understand that God sees and knows everything, to remember there are angels and there are demons, there are other eyes on things. And these days, you know, who knows what other eyes there could be? Who knows what other eyes there could be? Just, you know, I'm on my way to India, God willing, tomorrow afternoon. We've got special programming the rest of the week and hopefully live from India Friday, Monday. So don't miss any of these next days. But, you know, go to the checkout counter, fly on the airplane, hang out at the airport. Who knows what other eyes there are looking at you? But we should always walk in a way that glorifies Jesus. In other words, closing the doors, darkness coming, nobody looking doesn't give us the right to sin, does it? So let me give you my bottom line reflections today. Once again, I'm struck by the fact that we need a wake-up call here in the Church of America. This is a reality I've lived with for decades now, but I'm struck with it once again because we, notice I'm not saying you, I'm saying we. I could speak for myself, but I think it applies to many others as well. So we are so asleep in the material prosperity of this age. We are so caught up with other things, external things, things that do not matter. We are so focused on secondary things that we've lost our moral consciousness. We've lost our moral sensitivity. We've lost the grieving over that which is wrong. We've lost the passion for that which is right. We often don't hate what is evil and love what is good. We know there's certain things we shouldn't do and others we should, but the depth of it is often lacking. We're often a superficial people. I've said for many years that we want microwave ministry, instant results with no preparation, and that our fast food faith has produced biodegradable believers. The fact is, though, there's no such thing as drive-through discipleship, and therefore, the things that really matter take time. As I'm about to fly to India, I think of times where we'd be traveling in India 22 hours one time, went less than 300 miles by car, and stopped somewhere to get something to eat. Would you like to eat? Sure, it's hours before the food is ready because they don't have a microwave lifestyle in the villages in India. It can cause us to stop and ask, what really matters? It can cause us to stop and say, how can I put my roots down deeper? How can I not be part of this superficial age? How can I be a person of depth? How can I be a man or woman of God? That's the challenge for us, friends. It's difficult, but we've got to go against the grain, and by the grace of God, we will. Let us put our roots down deep in Jesus' name and get established. Time for us to wake up. Back with you tomorrow. Have a blessed, awesome day.